Hi, everyone. New supply chain regulations are here, and we're going to show you what to make of them. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. The EU's new Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive regulation will massively impact how organizations will manage their supply chains going forward. And the Ethicast is running a special four-part series to give you what you need to know, not just to comply with this new regulation, but to use it as a blueprint for advancing your supply chain program to even higher levels of success. We have a terrific panel assembled for this discussion featuring Patrick Nates, CEO of Vector International, a business consultancy around responsible business with a special focus on ESG, headquartered in Brussels, Belgium. Patrick is joined by Rob Bales, Director of Sustainable Supply Chains at Control Risks, a global specialty risk consultancy headquartered in London, England. And they are hosted by Ethisphere's own Executive Vice President and resident supply chain expert, Craig Moss. And now, without further delay, here's Craig, Rob, and Patrick.
Hi, I'm Craig. Welcome back. I'm here with Rob and Patrick again for part four in our series. Today, we're going to be looking at how the supply chain due diligence regulations could reshape your relationship with your suppliers. Across your supply base, you could have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of suppliers. And obviously, you cannot deal with all of them in exactly the same way. You already may have very good third-party risk management programs in place for a certain topic. You might be great at data privacy and a novice in environmental compliance in the supply chain. These are all issues that you're going to have to deal with. What I want to start off with now is, with all that data and all those suppliers that they have, how do you see them starting to be able to prioritize where to put an emphasis?
When you've got 30,000 tier one suppliers or 40,000 tier one suppliers, it quite simply isn't possible to run that sort of level of risk assessment and due diligence across that. And nor is it necessary, because risk is not going to be the same everywhere. So, we talk about identifying, potential risk and prioritizing your tier one suppliers. And, there are fairly straightforward ways that companies can approach that, and indeed that many of, larger, more mature businesses, many that we've seen over the years, have already been doing in pockets, which is, looking at different ways to identify, your potential high-risk population of suppliers. And there are data sets out there that look at those sorts of things. You can look at country ratings. You can look at, country and or commodity risk registers. There are a number of those that exist now, and in fact, an increasing number of those that exist. And we, would always advise companies, in addition to those, to really talk to their procurement teams as well. In my experience, nobody knows the supply chain risk better than the procurement team and the buyers, who've probably been buying their commodity for 20 years, and they may not have the sort of the compliance or the sustainability language. But if you get those buyers in a room and engage with them, then you'll often get that sort of high level materiality assessment that you need. So there are many ways that companies can just pull different third party data sets that they can combine that with internal information, speak to the buyers, and then really, say, look, of our 10,000 tier one suppliers, where is our potential high risk? Where do we want to engage? And then we're going to go after that high risk population. The one thing I would just caveat is quite a lot of companies use spend and criticality as one of the inputs into doing that. And that's all fair and well, but we do have to be careful that quite often the highest risks, by their very nature, can sit with some of the lowest spend suppliers. And if you look at the UN Guiding Principles on Human Rights, they're very clear that severity and likelihood are the criteria that one should use when identifying risks. So we just have to be a bit careful that we're not missing that when we prioritize suppliers as well.
I think that's a good point. And it really makes me think about some kind of matrix where spend, of course, is one issue, but the risk factor is another, because you could have somebody where you have a very low spend that is incredibly high risk for you. And then also the flip side to that is I've seen in many cases is, depending on how famous you are as a company, if you only represent 2% of the output of a certain factory and something goes wrong in that factory, the media is going to go to the most famous company sourcing there. So somebody else might be buying 50% of their output, you're buying 2%, but if you're famous, you're the headline. And that's another thing that I think companies need to understand in the whole push here and the whole supplier relationship. Is that dynamic also? Is where do you stand in the importance to them? And where do you stand in importance to the media in terms of who they would highlight if there was a negative impact? Patrick, what kind of advice do you have for companies as they start to engage their suppliers? A new reg comes out, you're sitting in Europe, you get this new reg, you've got a lot of suppliers you need to communicate with and start to talk to. How would you suggest they go about that?
We start by communicate. Just make sure that everybody actually understands, you know, what this is, what the expectation is, and kind of what the mutual role is. And that can happen quite quickly through communications, but also it can happen through self-paced learning on platforms where suppliers in different languages can pick it up, you know, fairly quickly. Or you can work through associations or federations to do some of that work. But I think knowledge is key and identifying the expectation. The next thing will be to continue to communicate, right? I mean, we talked about risk prioritization and we talked about risk tolerance. So, you know, you've got these different levels of tolerance that you have for certain types of suppliers. And with that, you go into building that relationship of trust. We talked about in earlier episodes that it is about managing, you know, residual risk. And residual risk is about the inherent risk, but also it is about risk and controls. And controls, you know, will vary from day to day because the circumstances change. That needs to happen in partnership. And in order for that to happen, collaboration and communication is critical. Building it into regular dialogue with the supplier is going to be an element where you are talking about one aspect of total business risk, but speaking the same language. Mm-hmm. And depending on how strategic that supplier is, that frequency of that dialogue is just going to be higher. So it's not necessarily that you're going to take a completely different approach. I think it's going to be, you know, maybe a different medium or a different frequency, depending on how strategic or how risky that supplier is.
You know, in a lot of the work that I've done in supply chain issues, I think how you approach the supplier with that communication is critical too.
Yep.
So I always advocate that it should be more of a collaborative approach. We're in this together. It's in our mutual interest to try to help you improve whatever it would be, your waste reduction program, to help you improve your excessive overtime or reduce your excessive overtime issue. I think if you go at it with a collaborative approach, you're going to encourage more transparency. So often in the social compliance end of things, you see factories or farms that try to hide what's really going on. And that creates this cat and mouse game, which I think we want to discourage. You know, the cat and mouse game is not really the result. The result of these regulations, the desired result, is to improve the transparency, to try to improve the performance to the benefit of the environment and the workers in the supply chain. So I think if we go back to the beginning and look at why are these regulations coming into place, it's to create a positive change in how things get done. I think that's important. And therefore, I think that you want to go at your suppliers with a collaborative approach as opposed to a policing approach. I've worked with different companies, some that work with use a very much of a policing approach. You know, we're here to see what you're doing wrong. I don't find that that's the most effective. Ultimately, companies do need to use a combination of the carrot and the stick, to motivate suppliers, but I prefer typically to recommend going in with a more collaborative and transparent approach. Rob, over to you. Basically, pick up on anything that we've talked about, either prioritization or about their supplier relationship. I'd like to pull you in and hear from you on this now.
You know, we've seen over the last 10 years an increase in, you know, multi-stakeholder, well, longer than that, 20 years, multi-stakeholder in initiatives and platforms, which are really designed to bring companies together to help drive sectoral change, because of course we recognize that, you know, one company acting on its own is never going to deliver the change in the supply chain. So we have to bring all of the companies around the table. And I think, you know, to your point, the kind of the ethos that sits behind all of those is really mission driven. It's a vision of change in a sector that recognizes that all companies have to play an equal part. And that if you look at it as a hierarchical approach, we mandate that you do this, you're never going to achieve very much. And so I think we need to see more of those collaborative platforms. We need to encourage companies, once they've identified their risks in the supply chain, to engage with those different sectoral platforms, or, you know, commodity platforms. They can come in many different forms and structures. But just to your point, I mean, I think I remember a conversation just 3 weeks ago, an initial conversation with an interested client. And the first question that they ask is, well, what happens if we have no leverage, or we have very little leverage over many of our suppliers? You know, what do we do? And I mean, there was an answer given to that, but I think it's almost the wrong question to be asking at that stage anyway, because I think the question you need to be asking is, well, do I have visibility of risks to start with? Do I even understand what the risks are? Because I don't even need to think about applying any leverage at this point, because I don't have the visibility. So build your baseline first, get the data that you need, and then worry about the leverage later. But even then, you're never going to drive that change just through policing alone. You're going to drive it through getting suppliers to buy in, to collaborate, and to share in a vision of change.
I was at an event a few years ago, and it was a supplier summit for a major multinational retailer. And basically they had maybe 1,000 suppliers in this summit. And basically, we stood up on stage and we said to them, okay, right now there are 1,000 of you here. When you come back in 2 years, there's only going to be 600 of you here. And the 600 that are here are going to meet certain criteria, or because we're elevating our environmental and social compliance regulations. So there is a case where they're using their purchasing power to try to drive positive behavior and change. To Patrick's earlier point, though, if you look at the other dynamics, and I want to switch now to put ourselves in the supplier's shoes a bit. I've sat with a lot of suppliers, and they say they get really, really disconnected messages and conflicting messages from the procurement people and the sustainability people inside one customer. Patrick, what's your take from a supplier standpoint?
I think suppliers are very confused if they were to listen to different customers and different audiences from one customer. And they panic, and then they get overwhelmed with all of the regulations and criteria that are being thrown at them, and they panic even more. And my reply to these conversations is, stop, take a deep breath. Stop panicking. You have been running a successful business for a number of years. These criteria and requirements help you manage your business. Do not do it for them. Do it for you. Do not panic. Don't throw everything out. Build on what you have. You've been managing social compliance for decades, for years, depending on the maturity of the organization. You have your own suppliers. You know your sector. Build on that. Manage your risk. Get the data and demonstrate in a dialogue to your customer that you are a trustworthy, responsible supplier. That is your mission. Get all the chatter out of brand 1, brand 2, brand 3. you know, compliance people, brand one, procurement people, brand two. Do it because this is the best way to run your business. And the best way to run your business is to manage your risk. That usually gets a very positive response with let's go to work. So that would be my perspective.
I think that's absolutely the right approach, because what's happening, and we're seeing this, you know, live play out with client conversations, is example, European manufacturer of, you know, white label household products supplying into the big retailers and the big brands is receiving multiple different sustainability policy requirement requests from its customers, and it's supplying 15 of, you know, the biggest CPGs and retailers across Europe. And those are often conflicting demands. They're broad, and the company, the manufacturing business, is firefighting those on a daily basis, which is neither efficient, not a good use of resource, and it's really directionless. It's just responding to one at a time. So what that business has to do is to say to itself, what is our position on ESG? What is our vision and our policy and our position on supply chain? What are the systems and the controls we're going to put in place, our end-to-end due diligence system? Go away and invest the energy and time to get your system in place. And then when you get all of these demands, you're really building and replying to say, here's our system. We've put this in place. And you're gonna hit the 80% with that system. And so that's a much, much better use of time. Difficult to do, of course, given the pressure that many of these suppliers are under on a daily basis. But there you go. I think it's absolutely the right way to approach it.
I couldn't agree with you more on that, Rob, is that you can't be reactive to all the demands of each individual supplier. That's why I think some of the collaborative programs, I think one of you mentioned collaborative programs like the industry programs before, Responsible Business Alliance, RAP in the apparel sector, things like that. I think they can play a very valuable role because the intent is to reduce audit duplication and put more emphasis on the improvement. And, you know, an audit and a lot of these things, they're measurements, right? And what we want, and I think these regulations, because of the holistic nature of the regs, where they look at remediation, they look at monitoring and reporting, they're trying to drive this kind of continual improvement cycle through putting regulations in place. And I think for companies, if you can think about shifting, instead of 80% of your effort going into measurement, you get 80% going into improvement, that's really going to be the ultimate, hopefully the result of this is the shift from reactive to more preventative and improvement-driven programs. So with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much. Feel free to get in touch with any of us if you have any follow-up questions, and we look forward to hearing from you in the future.
To learn more about how Vectra International can help you improve your organization's ESG performance, enhance your quality assurance processes, and transform your business, please visit vectrainternational.com. That's VECTRA-INTL.com. And to learn more about how control risks can help you advance your ethics, compliance, and governance programs, as well as a host of additional services, please visit controlrisks.com. And finally, for a host of helpful resources to help you better understand and manage your supply chain due diligence process, please visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.